Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And we have podcasts of prior shows on that website as well. You can go take a look-see. Today is May 17th, 2017. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 20,606, the NASDAQ at 6,011, and the S&P at 2,357. Our topic tonight, selling a principal residence. We are live tonight. We'll take your calls. Lori C's in the studio, and we'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And I know it's a beautiful and lovely evening tonight. So folks who are driving around, if you have questions about a principal residence, selling a principal residence, the nuances of selling a principal residence, jot the number down. Well, not while you're driving, but when you get home, you can call in again at 610-758-8810. So selling a home can be very simple or very complicated, depending on the circumstances. And even the simple solution may not be as simple as it seems. So I thought I would go through some of the nuances of selling your home. And publication 523 from the IRS is about 21 pages long. So if you think selling your home is easy, it may not be as easy as we might think. 21 pages, what could it include? Well, as you start answering questions about your principal residence or selling a home, all of a sudden you may find yourself going through the maze of the decision making as to whether your gain will be excluded, the flow chart of what might or might not apply to you. Different things that come up might be, you know, have you ever rented it? Did you ever use part of it for business? Are you married and you weren't when you first had your home? What else? Was it a rental property before? Or are you converting it to a rental? There's just so many different nuances for a principal residence. Do you have more than one home? That's what I wanted to add as well. So there are a number of issues that could come up with the principal residence. So I thought I would go over those. The other thing that I have run into is people who may have been in their home, you know, 20 or 30 years, you know, going on 20 or 30 years, still think that the old principal residence exclusion rules apply. They don't realize, because they haven't had to pay attention to the rules for selling a principal residence, that they have evolved. Some people will come in and say, well, you know, isn't there a special rule if I'm over 50? And they're thinking back to some tax rules that applied quite a while ago. So I thought I would go over some of the rules that we're talking about today and why it can actually be quite easy. Let's start with how your home or the sale of your principal residence would qualify for an exclusion of the gain on a sale when you're selling your home. So I want to also mention and just make sure everyone's clear. Publication 523 is called Selling Your Home, and I am heavily referencing that this evening. So Selling Your Home, Publication 523. And there's several other publications that they will reference in that publication because you might go off in a different direction with whatever set of circumstances you may apply to you. But simply, your sale qualifies for exclusion of $250,000 of gain if you're single, $500,000 if you're married filing joint, if all of the following requirements are met. Bump, 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 three requirements. Now, I'm going to stop before I mention those three requirements because some of you who are listening might say, in a million years, I'm not going to have a $250,000 gain. Well, great. Then if you're single and you, or even if you're married and your home is less than $250,000, so you're going to sell it, let's pretend, for $200,000. And you might say, well, there's this exclusion and I'm way under, so I've cleared the pathway, might not apply. Well, not exactly. There are still other criteria that you need to meet. Number one, you owned the home and used it as your main home during at least two of the last 5 years before the date of sale. So now you say, well, Lori, okay, yes, I lived in the home. It was my principal residence. It was my main home two out of the last 5 years. Check that box. That's good. Number two, you didn't acquire the home through a like-kind exchange. Some people don't even know what that is. If you don't know what it is, then you didn't do it. And generally, we don't have like-kind exchanges when we're talking about kind of personal use type of property. So for those people who do know what like-kind exchanges are, if you didn't acquire the home through a like-kind exchange during the past 5 years, that's something called a 1031 exchange. Generally, I would expect that that would not apply for the most people. Number three, you didn't claim any exclusion for the sale of a home that occurred during a two-year period ending on the date of the sale of the home, the gain from which you now want to exclude. So basically, what that is in the last couple of years, you didn't take advantage of this gain exclusion. All right. So very simply, if you have lived and owned the home for at least two out of the last 5 years, you didn't do it in a, didn't acquire the home in a like-kind exchange, and you haven't sold another home that was a principal residence whereby you excluded the gain in the past 2 years, and your gain wasn't over that $250,000 if you're single or $500,000 if you're married filing joint, then it's basically not a reportable transaction. When you do go to sell a principal residence, typically I don't know who asks these questions. Is it the realtor? Is it the mortgage people, the settlement people, the title people? Generally, you're going to have to answer some questions to let them know if this is a sale that is going to qualify for that exclusion. They're going to say, did you live and own in it the last two out of 5 years? And does it qualify as your principal residence? And a couple other questions, because if they know that the gain is less than $250,000 or $500,000, and they might know it's going to be less than that because the sale price is less than $250,000, then they're not even going to report the sale to the IRS. Normally, real estate sales are reported on a tax document called a 1099-S. S is in Sam, but how I remember is it sale of personal residence. So 1099-S. If you meet those qualifications and the sale price is under those amounts and you've checked off those boxes, generally the sale's not going to get reported to the IRS. All right. So we're going to talk about some of the hidden words in those descriptions that we further have to explore to make sure that it indeed still applies to your sale. Words like main home, and reference to two of the last 5 years, owning and using. So we're going to talk about what that means when we come back from our first break. The phone number is 8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we're talking about the sale of a principal residence. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So talking about the sale of a principal residence, just some other generalizations or misconceptions I think that some people have had about selling their home is relying on tax law that is from 30 years ago. So tax laws change. They change, you know, frequently. So you always want to make sure, whether it's selling your home or some other transaction that you may be going through, that before you enter into a particular transaction, don't assume that the tax rules as you think you know them are the ones that apply, because sometimes tax rules have changed. And that is one of them, the selling your home, because there is a gain exclusion if you fall qualify for these certain criteria that I mentioned before I took that first break. The other thing is sometimes people think it's a one-time exclusion, a lifetime exclusion. Again, that is some of the old rules. So you could actually do this, you know, every several years, where you buy a principal residence, have a nice little gain on it, and as long as you've lived and owned it for 2 out of the last 5 years and the gain is under this particular amount, 250 if you're single, 500 if you're married, filing joint, you could use that exclusion fairly frequently. So I bet there are people who probably have taken advantage of that. That is quite an advantage to be able to exclude the gain. I suppose where the IRS may have thought that wouldn't be a big issue is really houses don't necessarily appreciate at such a fast rate that it would make sense for you to kind of be flipping houses like that. But some people might do it. It depends on if you're someone who might move into a home, make it your principal residence, buy a dump, a fixer-upper, make it all really nice, live there for 2 out of the 5 years, and then have a nice little gain on it and sell it, exclude the gain because it was your principal residence, and move on and do it over and over again. I'm sure there are people who do that. So just be careful of any, changes in the rules. Always kind of double check. Now, we talked about some of those words that you're going to have to be careful of when we talk about you had to own the home and use it as your main home during at least 2 of the last 5 years. Let me talk about what main home means. And again, this is from publication 523 from the IRS. If you own or live in more than one home, the test for determining which home is your main home is a facts and circumstances test. So this is especially applicable for people who have more than one house. And we do have people who sometimes own more than one home. You may be on the title of your parents' old home. They might have done that and you didn't even realize they put your name on it. Well, you might own it, but you didn't maybe live in it 2 out of the last 5 years. That might not be your main home then. Sometimes people will have vacation properties that they go to, or what do you call those winter people? Snowbirds. I'm hearing it from the echoes from Lori C. The snowbirds. Sometimes the snowbirds will have a place down in Florida, and they may be there, you know, 4 or 5 months of the year, or even close to 6 months. That may not be the main home, or they might think, is that my main home, or is my main home up in Pennsylvania? So let's talk about the facts and circumstances that we have to look at when we're talking about a main home. The most important factor is where you spend the most time. And again, this is right from Publication 523. The most important factor is where you spend the most time. Where do you have your address with the U.S. Postal Service? Where do you have your voter registration? Where do you file your tax returns? You know, what address do you use? What state of residency do you, where you file your tax return? Where is your driver's license? Where is your car registration? Is your home near where you work, where you bank? Is the residence of one or more family members? Is it near your church? So if you try to say that you've sold a home at a gain and you're going to exclude the gain because it was your main home and you lived and owned it 2 out of the last 5 years, and it's in Florida on the coast and you had a nice $500,000 gain on it that you want to exclude, but all the facts and circumstances indicate that you really are a Pennsylvania resident with your Pennsylvania registration and all of that other stuff, the facts and circumstances actually place your domicile, your main home, as somewhere other than this property you're selling. Well, that's not going to fly. So again, your home would qualify for the exclusion from gain if you own the home and use it as your main home during at least 2 of the last 5 years before the date of sale. Now, the other criteria that needs to be considered a little bit more thoroughly as well is, were you there 2 of the last 5 years? So many people might think you have to be there the last 2 years out of the five, the most recent two, and that's not the case. So I had someone who had owned a home, well, an apartment, but they owned it. It was their principal residence in New York City. And they moved to the Lehigh Valley. So they had their principal residence that they left. Well, we were still watching within that 5 year period that if they could have sold that property, it still could have qualified for some exclusion on the gain, because it would have been their principal residence and their main home used and owned 2 out of the last 5 years, and they had 5 years to fulfill that. So I was trying to kind of guide them that, boy, if you think you're going to sell this apartment, it would be great if you could sell this apartment within this time period to get the exclusion on the gain. As it turns out, they didn't, but it would have been a good plan, but they did rent it. Now, a little bit later in the show, I'm going to talk about what impact it might have if you're using your principal residence during that period for something other than your principal residence. You know, how does that impact that exclusion of the gain on your tax return? So we'll talk about that in a little bit. Even before we kind of understand some of these rules, you also want to see if you think you would have a gain at all. Now, if the property that you bought has appreciated over time, you might expect that there would be a gain, but you may have done some improvements to the property. So when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about how you look at the cost basis of the property. How does someone talk, you know, what is cost basis? What does that mean? You know, how do I prove that? So we're going to talk about that when we come back. And even if you don't think you have a gain, you might still end up with one of those tax documents, that 1099-S, whereby you do have to report that sale on the tax return. So I want you to be ready for that before you have to do it. So when we come back, we're going to talk about the cost basis on the property that you're selling. Phone number is 610-758-8810. We can take questions live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. Again, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Thank you, Neil. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices with your host, Lori Siebert. We're talking about the sale of a principal residence. I know it's a beautiful, lovely night, but if you have questions, we are here taking live calls. If you'd like, you can speak on air or off air if you're not comfortable talking live on air. Lori C will answer the call, write down the question, bring it into the studio. Phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Let's back up for a minute and talk about if you sell your principal residence. I've been talking about excluding gains. Well, hey, Lori, how do I know if I have a gain or not? How do I know what is my cost basis? What does that mean? Well, basically, when you purchase your home, you know, you make an offer. And they accept it. And let's say you bought the house for $150,000. Well, when you go to settlement, sometimes you're paying more than $150,000 because there's something called closing costs that you end up having as well. And some of those closing costs that you'll see on your settlement sheet or HUD statement, that's what they're called. And typically the settlement sheet is kind of two columns, and it's very long paper, and you have the buyer's side on one side and the seller's side on the other, and the buyer and seller sometimes have different transactions or costs that are allocated to them. But that settlement sheet tells us lots of information, and it will tell you how real estate taxes are allocated. It will tell you what kind of commissions were paid to the realtor, and if there are attorney fees, title fees, transfer fees, that type of thing. And some of those costs are settlement charges that add to the cost basis of your property. So let's pretend it's like $5,000. Now, you can't include escrow, and you know, escrow is where the mortgage company might escrow some interest or real estate taxes that they want to make sure you're paying, so they'll take some extra money at closing for that. I'm not talking about escrow monies. I'm talking about certain settlement charges. So let's pretend it's $5,000. So we've paid $150 plus $5,000 of settlement charges. So now my cost basis, what I've, you know, paid for this property now is $155,000. 20 years later, that property is now worth $260,000. I'm a single person. 20 years, I'm handy. When I first got the house, I did some major renovations to it. I redid the kitchen. I redid the bathroom. I did some landscaping. And all of this cost, you know, money over time. So I did the kitchen, $20,000, $5,000 for just a facelift in the bathroom, $5,000 of landscaping. So we had $30,000 of improvements. Well, if I kept track of those over time, and now I'm going to sell my property, I have lived and owned it more than two out of the last 5 years. What is my gain? Well, $260,000 less the $155,000 that I, you know, originally paid for it is $105,000 gain. But wait, what else could have impacted my cost basis? Well, those major improvements. So my kitchen and major improvements we're talking about. So that was another $30,000. So my cost basis is actually $185,000. And my gain is then about $75,000. And I've been telling you all along, if my gain is less than $250,000 as a single person, and I've lived and owned in the home 2 out of the last 5 years, and those other exchanges didn't count, then I can exclude that $75,000 gain. But because the sale was over $260,000, I'm expecting that I'm probably going to get a tax document from the broker who sold the house. So I'm going to have a 1099-S for $260,000. Now, you know in your mind, hey, I didn't have a gain. I had a gain, but it was excluded. I shouldn't have to report this. Lori told me I don't have to report this. But hey, guess what? The IRS doesn't know how much you paid for it. The only thing the IRS knows is that you sold it for $260,000. So if you have a 1099-S that you received, you better report it. And it gets reported on Schedule D. And what you would show is your original purchase date and the cost. And again, the IRS isn't going to necessarily know what the cost is, and they're going to take your word for it. So if you're ever audited, you have to make sure that you have your records. So we want you to keep those records of the renovations. So you're going to show your cost of two, or your sale proceeds of $260, your cost of what is it? What did I tell you at this point? $185, and it would look like you're going to have a gain, but typically the software will up it if they know it's a principal residence and all those exclusions apply, and you're going to end up having zero even though you're showing a $260,000 sale proceeds. It'll kind of wipe it out. There will be no gain. All right. We have Cheryl in Allentown. Is Cheryl on the line? Cheryl called in with a comment. She said, who would ask questions about who lived in the house and entitled the realtor or the title agent, forbidden by law to give tax advice? No one would ask these questions. So I think what Cheryl's saying is when you go to sell the home, people are not asking. There is a form I've seen people ask these questions as if you've lived and owned it the 2 out of the last 5 years. So I think what she's saying is it's forbidden by law for a realtor or a title agent to give tax advice. They don't ask those questions is what Cheryl is saying. But I have seen that form whereby there is no related 1099-S. So Cheryl, I am not sure who's asking these questions. But I know that I have seen it in a stack of papers on a settlement where someone asked if they had, I believe, owned or lived in the home 2 out of the 5 years. And I assumed that was prompting the 1099-S to not be generated. So I have only seen the 1099-S generated when the sale's been for more than 250, when it's been under 250. If I've seen those questions answered or that applies, I've had clients tell me they don't get the 1099-S. So Cheryl, if you have some other information, that would be great. But thank you for calling in with that comment. So the realtors and title agents are forbidden by law to give tax advice. So she said she's not sure who's asking those questions. I'm not sure either, but I know I've seen the form. So, and I'm assuming that's why there's no 1099-S in these particular situations. So regardless of that, assume you're going to get a 1099-S and make sure that you have your cost basis information handy. Generally, I tell people to keep like a folder in their file cabinet. When you first buy your home, keep that settlement sheet. You're going to need that for your current year tax return in case they allocate any of the real estate taxes. But then you're going to want to have it in the event you ever sell your home. And you don't know what your circumstances are going to be 2 years from now, 5 years from now, or maybe 20 years from now. You might change it change the nature of the property from a principal residence to a business interest, rental, back to principal residence. You never know. So just keep track of the records. And when I talk about the home improvements you're going to keep track of, you're not going to keep track of if you're just doing little repairs, you know, changing the light bulbs, putting in a new fixture, you know, painting here and there. You have to keep track of the home improvements. And in fact, if you put in new wall-to-wall carpet for $5,000 and 10 years later you took it all out, you don't get to count that. Well, who's going to keep track of that? You almost need an Excel spreadsheet. So just do your best, keep track, and then when it's going to apply to you, you'll have all the information in your folder. Folks, we're talking about the sale of principal residence. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. The phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
The time is 6:30. You're listening to WDIY 87 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 66. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 91. Friday, there's a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Afternoon, mostly sunny with a high near 83. The outlook for Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 72. And Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 71. The time is 6:31.
Thank you, Neil. Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about the sale of a principal residence. If you have questions or comments, because we've had some good comments, Cheryl called in and let us know that she doesn't think people are asking these questions about the ownership. So I am just wondering why the 1099-S's wouldn't be getting generated. That'll be curious. I'm going to have to see if I can get some more information on that. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. That's why I also love doing this show. First of all, our listeners always come up with such great questions and ideas for shows. So if you ever have an idea for a show, I welcome them always. And I think sometimes people are hesitant to call in or email because they think, oh, someone's going to bother them. Well, anyone who's ever called me or emailed me ideas or questions knows I don't bother them. I mean, I answer your question and I will not bother you again. So unless you want to be bothered, but no, I don't. So I appreciate the feedback. That's what we do here. We try to educate our listening audiences. And one of the reasons I tell people I know as much as I do, because people always say, oh my gosh, you know so much. And frankly, I don't think I know anything, but and people tell me not to say that, but it's true. It's because I like asking questions. I like learning. And that's how we, all get better and move forward faster, because when we participate in the education process, it helps us all. All right, so we are talking about the sale of principal residence. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, and you can ask live on air or off air, whatever you are more comfortable doing. So real quick, selling a principal residence, make sure that you're keeping track, folks, of your records. Keep those settlement sheets. Keep those HUD statements. Keep records of any improvements that you do to the home. Landscaping counts as a capital improvement. Now, again, I'm not talking about planting flowers here and there. I'm talking when you first, you know, maybe buy your home or you do a complete landscaping job. We all know that can cost, you know, $10,000. That's not planting a flower. That big landscaping jobs are considered a capital improvement and could be added to the cost basis of the home. But as I mentioned earlier, certain capital improvements, if they have now gone by the wayside, we can't count those again. And I think that's one of those little notes buried in these publications as well. So I suppose if you redo your kitchen two times, only the second time is going to count. So a big kitchen renovation of $20,000 in 1940, and then a big kitchen renovation in 2010 for $50,000, it's the $50,000 one that you're going to be able to count. Another factor that some people don't realize that could impact the cost basis would be if you have, if you've inherited the property or if you have a spouse who has passed away. There is a step up in the basis. If it's joint with your spouse, there's a step up in basis on half of it. So if you bought the house for $10,000, you know, back in 1930, and then spouse dies in, you know, 2010, and the house is now worth $200,000, there would be a step up in basis on half of it for federal purposes. So that is something to keep in mind, too, that many people may not factor in. If by chance there is a home that someone owns and they pass away and it becomes part of their estate, then it's a different character of property. Some people think that they need to know the cost basis going back to when mom or dad or grandma or grandpa bought the home. But if they die and they own it in their estate, they get a step up in basis as well. And then it's not the sale of a principal residence in the estate. Now, this can get very complicated. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole too far, but also you have to keep in mind there may be a time where husband and wife own the home and then one of the spouses dies and you hadn't sold your principal residence now, but now that, you know, my spouse has passed on and I realize I don't want to be in the home anymore and I want to sell it, and it might be like a year later, there is a special exclusion that could still apply if you are a surviving spouse. So let me quickly read from one of my tax books. Either the surviving spouse or the deceased spouse must meet the two-year ownership requirement for the residence immediately before the spouse dies. But there's the exclusion. They still could take advantage of the $500,000 exclusion. So the $500,000 gain exclusion amount that applies to taxpayers filing a joint return also applies to unmarried surviving spouses if the sale occurs within 2 years of the death of their spouse, and you know, making sure that they meet those other requirements. So there's lots of nuances here. So just like I said, selling your principal residence sounds like it might be something really simple. It might not be as simple as we might think. Robert from Copley called in, and he asked, if his capital gain was $200,000, will he pay any taxes? He bought it for $150,000, sold it for $350,000, and he's not taking into account the improvements. That's a great question, Robert, because you might not have to scramble looking through your files and your folders for all of the improvements then, because if your capital gain is less than $250,000 and you lived and owned it two out of the last 5 years and you hadn't claimed an exclusion, you know, in the last preceding 2 years, and it wasn't the 1031 exchange, then you won't pay any taxes because that's excluded. So you can exclude as a single person $250,000. So even if you bought it for $150,000 and sold it for $350,000, that's a $200,000 gain. You're already under the $250,000. Close the door. You're good to go. So you don't even need to worry about the improvements. Now, I just want to add, though, to make sure that you didn't have any business use or rental portion of the home, because then you might have to do some extra calculations. So assuming it was not any kind of mixed use property, rental or business, then that's pretty good. Two out of the last 5 years, that is the simple case. And that's great. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Robert, thanks for calling in on that. So remember at the start of the show, I kind of said you could kind of go through the maze of questions where this could be very easy or it could be very complicated. The simplest ones are when you've lived and owned it in the last 2 out of the 5 years and your gain is under the 250 if you're single or 500 if you're married, filing joint. Sounds very simple. Just be cautious if it's married, filing joint, that you both have to meet certain requirements as well. So I believe for a married, filing joint couple, either can have owned the property 2 out of the last 5 years, but both would have had to have lived there. So either can own it to meet that 2 out of 5 year test if you're married, but you both would have had to have lived there. And also, if I haven't already said this, the 2 out of the last 5 years that you had to have lived and owned, generally what we're paying attention to there is, did you live in it 2 out of the last 5 years? And you don't have to live there consecutively. You may have bought a home in the Lehigh Valley and you lived here for a year, and then you got transferred to California. You got a job in California and you moved away, and you moved away for 3 years and you got transferred back to the Lehigh Valley, and you had kept your house and you might have used it for some other purposes, or you might have just kept it here, visited, you know, on vacations and holidays, because maybe your family's from the Lehigh Valley. So the family kept an eye on it. You kept the property. You loved it. It was your dream home. You didn't want to sell it. So you lived here 1 year. You moved to California for 3 years. Then you got transferred back and you lived here for another year. And then you decided it's no longer your dream home. It wasn't what you remembered. And now you want to sell it and you have a big gain. Well, as long as you lived in it 2 out of the last 5 years, it doesn't have to be consecutively. You could qualify for that exclusion. Okay, so there are lots of different nuances to that. I guess the bottom line, what I want to make sure that people take away from the show tonight, is don't have any assumptions about selling a principal residence. Don't have assumptions that the exclusion applies to you, but also don't have any assumptions that it's going to be taxable. Do your homework, be proactive, check out the situation, make sure you're paying attention to the dates that you have lived in your home, keep good records. You don't want the IRS coming back and saying that you don't qualify for the exclusion because, you know, you were filing tax returns in California for 5 years, when in fact, maybe you really did live here 2 out of the last 5. And you probably might have to prove that. You know, quite often people will say to me, you know, can I get rid of my records? Can I throw things away? Well, tax returns I like to keep for a very long time, especially because sometimes you don't know how far back you're going to have to go. So if you asked a general question about your tax return, someone might tell you, oh, you know, you only have to keep it for 3 years because that's all the IRS can go back to check your return. Well, that's not exactly right. But let's say, you know, generally it's 3 years. Well, in this rule, the 2 out of the last 5 years, it might have been important to have the return from 5 years ago. If we could see on a state filed return or a local return that indeed you lived in my example, in the Lehigh Valley for that period. So you want to retain certain records. And I know that it's hard to guess sometimes what's going to happen in the future or anticipate changes. But here's the other thing. Tax laws have changed. I already had mentioned that people are under a false assumption that there's only a one-time lifetime exclusion on the sale of a principal residence, on the gain exclusion. And that's not the case. That was many years ago, that you can do this more than once. So how do we know those rules won't change again? What if they change again? What if they make the exclusion of the gain, you know, $100,000 and not $250,000? Well, then we're going to want to make sure that you've kept track of all the improvements. Just keep that folder. I know a lot of people like throwing things away and shredding paper these days. Scan it then. Keep an electronic file. You never know when it might apply to you. When we come back, I've got 15 minutes. We're going to kind of wrap up this conversation. I'm going to talk a little bit about the mixed use and how that might impact you. But it's really almost too complicated to talk about. But I will just raise awareness tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Thank you, Neil. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I'm your host, Lori Siebert. We're talking about selling your home. And I want to point out, again, maybe it's because I'm a tax nerd. I don't know. I love the IRS website, irs.gov. There's so much information there. And there is a publication called Publication 523 that talks about selling your home. And we have been talking around some of the criteria that you need to meet to exclude a gain on the sale of your principal residence. But I also want to add why that publication is 21 pages is because they also talk about exceptions and circumstances that would be considered if you have unforeseen circumstances. So keep that in mind as well. That's why I talk about either doing your research or hiring professionals who can help you through the maze of questions or decisions in determining whether or not this gain exclusion applies to you based on your circumstances. They have you can have like a partial exclusion, and some of these apply depending on if you maybe had a work-related move or a health-related move. It could be not just for you, but other members of the household. Unforeseeable events, if your house was destroyed or condemned, if someone died, divorced, separated, if the birth of multiple births is some type of unforeseeable event. So maybe you have a one-bedroom house and now you just had quintuplets, they might make some little exceptions for you. What else did they have here? Well, look in the publication. So there are certain exclusions and facts and circumstances that the IRS will look at if you have some unusual event. And generally, you can find that, and they actually can be reasonable as well. I also want to mention, if you have business or rental use of your home, sometimes there's special calculations that you have to do. Because remember, we talked about this exclusion of your gain from income taxation being applicable to your principal residence and the sale of the principal residence. And I guess part of this was to encourage people to, you know, buy homes and be homeowners and that type of thing. And so that exclusion applies to that. If you have made part of your home an office, maybe you have a CPA firm on the first floor and you live on the second floor, then you're using part of your home for business use. That is there. They also differentiate between when you use an internal part of the home as business use. So if you have just a home office within your home, That is a different business use than to have like a store in your home or your CPA practice in your home or your workshop in your home where you're, you know, like a seamstress or something where you have like a dress shop on the first floor. So the IRS even differentiates within the home what kind of business use you have and how you're going to calculate that exclusion of the gain. I think generally if the business or rental space is within the home, then you still can use the exclusion. But if the business or rental space wasn't within your living space, as I mentioned, such as a first floor store, or residence, an apartment, then you will have a gain allocated to that piece. And recall that if you do have business use, you were probably taking depreciation on that share of the home. And then we have special rules on depreciation recapture or how the gain applicable to that depreciation is going to be taxed. It's going to be at a different tax rate. So those kinds of gains applicable to business use or rental use will be subject to some tax. But if it was within the space, then I believe they don't calculate the gain on that. So it is complicated. You just want to make sure that you're doing it right, and also make sure that you're keeping track of the time period that you own it, the cost basis, how you're holding the property, and when you're going to sell it. If you have a 1099-S, you want to make sure you're reporting it properly and accounting for all of the cost basis. Recall that when you go to sell the property as well, there could be closing cost or settlement charges that you may have incurred that would also impact the cost basis. I had some clients who owned a home in California, and they moved back to the East Coast, and they couldn't sell their home in California. The market wasn't good at the time, and they thought they're going to wait because, and I'm just going to make up these numbers. Let's pretend they bought the house in California for $800,000. And they said, no way, the market's down so much, we would have to sell it for $600,000, and that's just too low. So we're going to hold on to it. We're going to rent it, and we're going to move back to Pennsylvania. So now they're risking not having it as a principal residence and the exclusion on the gain. Well, what happened when they converted it to rental property, when you go to rent property, you have to depreciate it at the lower of cost or market. Lower of cost or market. So here they said, we don't want to sell our home. We don't want to take that big, huge loss. We paid $800,000 for our home. That is the cost. The market at the time we're going to convert it to a rental is $600,000, and the IRS tells us we have to depreciate it at the lower of cost or market. So now I'm going to depreciate my $600,000 rental property. Let's pretend I depreciate it for a couple years, and when you depreciate it, it lowers the cost of your property. So if I depreciated $10,000, now my cost or adjusted basis is down to $590,000. Well, if these folks go to sell that property at $700,000, do they have a gain or a loss? If you just looked at the rental property and you saw they sold it for $700,000 and their adjusted basis was $590,000, that looks like a gain, doesn't it? But the facts and circumstances say, but hey, this was a principal residence. They converted it to a rental property. When they originally bought it, it was $800,000. So there's special calculations that one has to go through to see if there's any gain or loss on that property. And in my circumstance, if I'm recalling correctly, there was neither a gain nor a loss. Because someone might think you have a loss. You might think, well, I bought it for $800 and I sold it for $700. That's a loss on the principal residence. But on the rental property, I sold it for $700 and my adjusted basis was $590. That looks like a gain. Well, when you go through the special calculations that the IRS tries to explain, in this case, if my recollection is correct, we had neither a gain nor loss. All right. So you have to be careful when you also have principal residences that you have converted to rental properties. Another example, I had a gentleman who had a rental property down in Florida, and he was living up here in Pennsylvania. He sold his principal residence here. He qualified for the principal residence exclusion and decided to move into that rental property he had in Florida. So he had had a rental property for several years. He had actually had bought it knowing that at such time when he retired, he was going to move down to Florida and was going to become a resident of Florida. So he had this rental property down there in Florida, rented it for years. And it wasn't a vacation home. It wasn't a mixed-use home. It was like purely a rental home down in Florida, investment property. Did it just so that he would have it for his retirement. Sells his home up here, principal residence, qualifies for the exclusion. What was going on with the rental property all those years is he actually was had some losses on it, because when he was renting the home, he gets depreciation, and depreciation was making it look like he had a loss on his rental property. Well, he was working at the time, making so much money that he wasn't allowed to take those losses. That's called passive losses, and they're suspended under certain rules. So his losses were suspended. He couldn't use them. Now he sells his principal residence. He moves into the rental property because he's converted the rental property now to a principal residence. Well, guess what? He couldn't take those losses. A lot of times people who are realtors or agents and people who flip houses there, do rental properties, they know that when they sell those rental properties, they eventually can take all those suspended passive losses on in the year they sell it. Well, if you take a rental property and convert it to a principal residence, you don't get to take those passive losses. They continue to be suspended. So you want to make sure that if you do that kind of transaction, which is kind of the flip side of what we've been talking about, you want to make sure you're tracking that in the eventual for the eventual time that you might sell that property that it had one time been a rental. So there's suspended passive losses because when he eventually sells it, he'll be able to take some of those losses that he was never able to take while he was working, while they were suspended, and could not take when he converted his rental property to his principal residence. You guys, I know this sounds complicated, and it is complicated, and sometimes my husband will tell me I get into too many details on the radio. I like details. The trouble is sometimes I lose people, don't mean to, but I hope what it demonstrates is that if you decide to go down the path of having a principal residence, that you've learned tonight to make sure you're keeping copies of your settlement sheets, that you have a folder in a cabinet somewhere or a folder on your computer that you're scanning things electronically where you're keeping track of all of the capital improvements you're doing to your home. And you make sure that you have documentation if you're living and owning in the home. Maybe you're cohabitating with someone. Well, you might eventually get married. You want to make sure that you have documented that someone is living and owning in the home 2 out of the last 5 years with you. I hope that's a takeaway for you. For the capital gain exclusion, don't assume that you have to pay tax on the capital gain on the sale of your principal residence, and don't assume that you don't have to report the sale of your principal residence, especially if you get that 1099-S. You want to make sure you're properly reporting it, even if you may not be reporting the gain, and know that you're not going to be getting the loss on a principal residence either. That's a personal loss. The IRS doesn't let us take personal losses. Okay? If you go down the path of a mixed use, make sure you're keeping careful records there as well. And before you sell the house, make sure you go through some tax planning with someone so that you know what to expect on your tax return and you know how it's going to hit so that you're prepared for it. There's nothing wrong with selling things at a gain and having taxes. Just make sure you're prepared for it. So you set aside a little bit of money that you're ready for the tax guy at the end. Folks, thanks so much for listening. I know it was a little bit of a complicated topic tonight. Thank you for listening. Next week, we're going to have a pre-recorded show, and then I'll be back, I guess, the first week of June. Topic to be decided. You're going to have to watch for the newsletter from WDIY. If you're not a member, you become a member, and then you'll get an email telling you what's coming up on the show each week. You can also go to WDIY.org as well for that information. So stay tuned for Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, listeners. Have a great week.